episode. Welcome to the Puyo Podcast. I'm Eric, and I'm joined by my co-host, Josh.
Hello.
And Gonzalo.
Hello.
We're going to talk about things and stuff. Canon now. I say it every time. Okay, so. Josh, you have a little bit of a game that you wanted to talk about today that we all played recently, correct?
I do.
You do.
It's a little PS1 game that nobody has heard of. It's everybody I talk to that's a gamer has never heard of this at all, and it's really a shame because it's quite a well-made little piece of work here, and it's called Battle Hunter. Battle Hunter for the PlayStation.
Wait, hold on. You use that terminology when you explain, like, a girl that is, like, she's a piece of work.
It's not a AAA title by any means. It's got its flaws. It's got its cracks, but it's still there. You can see that redeeming qualities in it, and in this case, addictive qualities, because I haven't stopped playing it since you guys left.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. What would you like, from my experiences with it, for the minimal amount of time, you grew up with it, though.
Yes. Yeah.
But it reminded me a lot of Final Fantasy Tactics, or like, what is it, Darkstone? Whatever the PS1 version of that is. But it's a lot like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it borrows a lot of aspects from those turn-based RPG strategy games, and essentially isometric view of a grid-based battleground, and you have different cards that accentuate your base RPG-like stats. So you have your movement, your attack, and your defense, and your health, and all that good jazz. But whatever cards that you draw can help boost whatever those stats are. So if you're trying to move, if you get a movement card, you can boost how many squares you can move, and et cetera, et cetera. And the whole point of the game, it's very simple and can be very quick and easy to just pick up, where you can play a couple little levels in short spurts, or you can sit down and just keep playing mission after mission, and it just never really gets boring to me. So it's a very interesting kind of setup that it has, where you can sit there and play it for hours at a time, or you can just quick pick up, play a 5-minute game, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Which I like.
That's usually the best kind of games, are like that, where you have the option to do it for like 5 minutes or do it for like ever.
Yeah.
Because there is a story hidden between the random missions that happen. Because when we played, we only experienced a couple of just the random missions that we just did. But the more that you, every time you level up, it comes up with a key story mission that comes up afterwards. And it just keeps building on itself.
All right. Musically, I think it excels quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely.
It's
the music gets stuck in my head like nobody's business. I actually have the soundtrack on my phone now, so I can listen to it.
Oh, nice.
That battle music is amazing.
It's pretty good.
That heavy guitar is just dun, 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 dun. So tasty.
I do like how it's like a card-based fighter. We don't have many of those.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of mixes a lot of the stuff that was somewhat popular at the time. Like, it has the RPG elements. It has that little bit of a card-based system in it. And then it has the turn-based strategy, which, like you said, Final Fantasy Tactics made pretty popular. And it's just nobody's ever played it. And it's really a damn shame.
It is a damn shame.
This is really good.
Well, yeah, it's really good game, and it's got really good multiplayer, too. Like,
oh, you can 4-player, really multiplayer. And it's competitive, which is the coolest part.
It's yeah, it can be competitive, it can be cooperative, however you want to play it. Like, that's, it gives you a lot of options, and it's just, oh, it's just so good. I can't tell you enough about this. Eric played it for, like, we played it for, like, what, an hour, maybe?
Yeah.
If that? And then you purchased a copy while you were sitting on my couch.
Yep.
That's how good this game is.
That's how much I liked it. $8, so it's not really expensive at all.
No.
Surprisingly.
Incredibly affordable.
Highly so, yeah, recommend.
That's the Josh pick of the week.
The only thing I do criticize on that, what I noticed, is... like,
pick your words carefully.
Like how Final Fantasy Tactics has layered environments where it's like you can go up and down and you get better stats versus if you're standing like above them or below them. It didn't have that aspect.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have like environmental.
It's flat.
Yeah, everything's flat. There's no. Yeah, yeah. I can see how that would.
Yeah, make it increase a buffered factor.
But then again, it's it gives you less of a like hard to. What is the word I'm looking for?
It simplifies things.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. More, a little bit more streamlined.
There you go. Not as many strategies needed.
Fabulous.
Hidden gem, even though I hate that term.
Yeah, it's a little overused now. But
it, yeah, true that. Well known title. It's a really good game for a cheap
The terminology price. Of hidden gem has been discovered far too many times.
Look at this hidden gem, Crash Bandicoot. Only 90s kids. Hashtag YOLO.
Only 90s kids.
So, you had yours. I'll tell you mine. Old game I like to call Zelda. Underrated. They only made one. So,
Legend of Legend of
Legend
yeah,
of
yeah, they only made the one. It's really a shame. Should've
wait
made more.
To the dank.
Legend of the Multiverse. Okay, with no. Bruce Lee. I mean, Jet Li.
Okay, it's Air Fortress for the NES. It's made by HAL, which... Are there any bad HAL games?
I know a guy named HAL, and he's pretty bad. Okay. But otherwise...
Yeah, I can't think of one.
Yeah, to answer your question, I don't think there really is a bad HAL game.
But it's severely underrated, and it's like... It's like... You could pick it up for, like, $5. And it's half... shooter, like in the beginning of it, like you boot it up and you push the button and it's like Air Fortress, and then you go into it and it's a shooter and you're like riding, you're sitting on top of a rocket, you're just riding on it, which is amazing in itself, but and it's like a shooter and it's a pretty like you're like, oh, it's just a boring generic shooter, but then you land, and then you go into a like a style like Blaster Master, where you have like a jetpack, and you can like go around inside of this like air fortress per se.
Mm-hmm.
And when you shoot your weapon, the coolest part is it pushes you back, so it has like the physics of like if you're flying in the air and you shoot a gun, you're gonna go back, obviously. So
nice.
It has like that type of physics about it, which you can use like to your advantage and can also screw you over.
It seems kind of advanced for the NES time too.
It really like... is, and it's
like 86.
I thought it 87. Was, I thought it was 88. I can't remember. I could look it up, but
it looks like an 87 game to me.
But it's definitely underrated, and it's a lot of fun. A little bit on the harder side later on, but it has its quirks. Obviously, like when there's stuff flying around the screen, like sometimes you just can't dodge it. You like, I don't know.
You don't really have a health bar either.
No, you have a health bar. It's like,
well, it's like the energy bar.
Yeah,
but that diminishes no matter what you're doing. You're standing still, you lose energy. You shoot, you lose energy. Everything you do consumes energy.
But that's the challenge. You gotta have enough. You have to have enough energy to go through the whole level. But if you run out of energy, then it's like game over.
The world has fallen into darkness.
Thank you, Final Fantasy.
I actually usually prefer titles that have that kind of system as opposed to you get hit once you're done.
Yeah.
Kind of. You know, it gives you, even if it's only a slight more chance, it's still more of a chance.
But, like Fester's Quest, 2 hits and then you're done.
Fester's Quest has really good music, though.
Oh, sounds up.
Xenophobe is Sunsoft, apparently.
Don't. It's produced by Midway, though.
It's all about that Xenophobe.
But yeah, Air Fortress, highly recommend. 10 out of 10. No, probably like 8 out of 10. Game of the Year, 2016. Pick up your copy at your local EB Games.
GOTY Definitive Edition, 10 out of 10. IGN would play again.
IGN.
Is it my turn to speak about?
It's your turn.
No.
Okay. All right.
You don't get a turn.
Star Wars Battlefront, right?
I'm going to have to
great game. This. Fucking AT-T's blessed shit. And all you hear is, watch out, Imperial Walker! And then you hear like a fucking pew-pew! And then, fucking stationary placement destroyed 25 points. Fucking A-Wings come in. All right? Because fucking everyone knows X-Wings can't fucking fight for shit against TIE Interceptors.
Oh. But I mean, yeah, a simpleton could tell you that.
Even Luke could tell you that. But, no, in all seriousness, no, mine's going to be newer than these Chode's decisions.
Can I use your because... sound effects from you going, pew, pew, pew?
Sure, but it's copyrighted, so fuck you.
He gets 5 cents of the profits every time. 5 cents is $0.
0 cents.
But it's a little game called Jamestown, released for the PS4. It's digital only, so.
Sadly.
Hey, man. Fuck you. But.
Whoa. Your tone.
You're using it all wrong. Stabbing in the face with a soaring gooch. But it's a shmup. Most people wouldn't think it's a shmup because it's Jamestown. Based on the settlement, on the first settlement of British colonials to come to America and settle. So it's based on the same thing. It's like set in the year 1617, and this British colonization is in Mars, and it's called Jamestown. Yeah, it's
so it's like recreated.
It's like it's like alternative history, which is really cool. And you play as this pilot who's trying to escape from the Queen, the monarch of England. So you go to this place to like build a new name and escape your old life. Turns out though, the Spanish are attacking this colonization, 30 Spaniards. With their curly mustaches. So it's a shmup, but it's all pixelated, right? So it looks really good. It looks great.
Like 16-bit graphics?
It's not 16-bit graphics.
Like 32-bit?
It's like 32-bit, yeah. It's like New Age retro pixel art.
Yeah, it's like emulating that kind of style, but with HD, so it looks absolutely freaking gorgeous. It looks so good.
It's really good. You could see every pixel, but in a good way. But it's a four-player shmup, which is really cool, because I don't think there's ever been one like that before. It's a pretty short game. It's only got around 6 stages to the base game, and if you buy like the DLC, which is like $5 in total, you get 2 new stages, which are set on the moon, like the moon of Mars.
The moon.
So Phobos and Deimos. And you get 4 new ships. And the ships are class-based, so you'll have, like, your vanilla ship that just shoots out, you know, beams and stuff like that. But you also have one that uses swords. You have one that throws TNT dynamite barrels. You have one that shoots out a fucking giant, like, laser beam that takes up half the screen, but you gotta charge every time.
Laser.
So it's really cool. And you also have, like, you also have defensive ships that can set up barriers. It's really cool. It's like a bullet hell. Where if you play on divine difficulty, kiss your fucking thumbs goodbye, dude, because you're gonna get carpal tunnel.
It's not a push and then you automatically fire.
It's no, like, it's not push because you have your primary weapon, which is just like, it's just a beam. That's all it is. You just shoot fucking laser little pew pews, and then you got your secondary, which is your ship's main power, so you can throw TNT, you know, stuff that I said. Use a sword. Or you can make, like, a clone of yourself to stay stationary and shoot cover, like, a side of the map.
But TNT wouldn't work in space.
I don't fucking know. Are you going to know astronomer?
Hey.
Astronomer!
It's space TNT. Give him a break.
But it's really cool. There's always big bosses at the end of it and stuff like that. It's really cool. Music is alright. It's not in the right home about. Cutscenes look like ass. They look like MS-DOS screens.
Oh, boy.
Looks like what screen?
MS-DOS.
DOS?
DOS?
MS-DOS?
I say DOS because I'm Spanish.
Don't you rip on DOS.
MS-DOS.
Oh,
But it's a really good game for like $10. It's not bad. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Pick it up.
Pick it up. Eric, bring us in.
Bring us in. Bring it in. So, a lot of us have interesting stories about how we got into collecting. Like, sometimes, from other people, what I've heard, it's like, oh, I found the Wii Virtual Console. Like, they gave me a download code for free, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then they got into it that way, whether it be digitally or physically. I think nowadays, physically is getting more popular. When I started, it was not popular at all. I've been doing it for, like, 7 or 8 years now. But the people, you got two separate classes of people. The people who play it and the people who just collect it and don't play it. Luckily, we all are the people who play it. And needless to say, I don't know what I was going to say.
But You know where you're going.
How about let's start with you, Gazelle, since you're so antsy.
Me? You really want to know?
It's really
not even that special, because...
Tell us how long you've been doing it.
Really? I've been doing it for only, like, a year and a half.
Okay.
And... Okay, let me get rid of Tinder.
He's got to focus.
The way I got into collecting was kind of weird, because it really wasn't through, like, finding a cartridge game or playing, like, a bunch of virtual console games on the Wii U. Like, I still did that, but I wasn't, like, going out and looking for these actively. I was like, oh, hey, look, Contra 3 on the Wii Virtual Console. I had that as a kid. Whatever. But it was kind of weird because me and my ex-girlfriend, Natalia, we went to...
God rest her soul.
God rest her soul. She's dead to all of us. But we went to a Final Fantasy concert on Valentine's Day of 2013. And there was a booth set up for, as some of you people know, for Midwest Gaming Classic.
Because they had that there?
Yeah, they were advertising Midwest Gaming Classic there. There was a booth. Because we got there like 30 minutes early at the Milwaukee Theater.
I didn't know they advertised.
Right next to like the BMO Harris Bradley Center.
It's a prime audience to advertise.
Yeah,
too,
they did a really good job.
Well, for your audience for Final Fantasy.
Exactly.
I'd imagine it'd be like a current Final Fantasy audience, not like a. Unless what music were they playing? Music from older games.
They were playing music from all the Final Fantasy games. That's the thing.
I thought it was just from like the new.
And the composer was there, Nobuo Uematsu, I think his name.
Really?
Yeah, dude. He took a stand up there and started singing One Winged Angel.
I would cry.
But that's for a different time. And
it's a different time.
There was a booth there for Midwest Gaming Classic, and they had Final Fantasy 2 set up. They had Final Fantasy 6. There was Blitzball going on the TV.
Blitzball?
Blitzball. And then they had Final Fantasy 13, which a lot of people hate, but I don't think it's that bad. But primarily, I have a soft spot for it because it's my first Final Fantasy game. It's got really good music. It's orchestrated. But I was like, holy shit, what is this event? And I started talking to one of the dudes who was working the booth, and he was telling me, like, yeah, this is a place where there's a bunch of retro games, and, you know, we just sell everything from Genesis, Nintendo, to all this weird stuff like Atari Jaguar and 3DO.
Genesis.
And I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know, I'll probably check it out. And that was, like, a month and a half after the Final Fantasy concert, so that was around, like, May. It was April, May, around there.
Yeah, but it was right fresh in your head, too, like, right after that. Like, boom, here it is.
Yeah. But I went there all by myself. No one wanted to go. I literally went by myself. And it was really fucking sick, because I was seeing stuff like pachinko machines playing Street Fighter 2. Like, I've never seen
pachinko?
That. Pachinko machines.
Sexy pachinko?
No, not sexy pachinko. Fuck you, Konami. But
erotic,
like, there was all these sweet games I've never even heard about back in the time. Like, I've never heard of Nightmare Creatures. I've never heard of Buck Bumble. I don't know what the hell that was.
Buck Bumble's not that good.
Well, I know, but regardless, like, there was all these amazing titles, and I was overwhelmed in a good way with all these NES games, and I'm like, you know what? How about I buy a Super Nintendo, buy some of these older Super Nintendo games, and how about we just start playing old school stuff for a minute? And then I went home that night, hooked up my Super Nintendo that I bought for like $20.
$20?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious.
Holy crap.
Because I handed the dude cash for $20.
Like, it was like 2 years ago?
It was like 2 years ago. It was, yeah, 2.5 years
That's
ago.
That's impressive for 2 years.
Yeah. It was a really good vendor. He wasn't like one of the... He didn't have a lot of stuff. So, and then... This was back when it was where all the machine arcades were. That's when the lobby was still sent. It was the vendor hall still.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, man. I popped in fucking... What the hell was I playing? I played Donkey Kong Country 1. Because I still had that in my house, and it was one of my favorite games. And I was like, this is fucking amazing. Like, the music, the graphics. Like going back. And naturally, I'm a competitive person. So just being able to like sit back and relax and just not get worked up about stuff was nice. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go buy my old games. And then I bought too much at the same time, and I just burnt myself out.
Yeah, you're trying to get back into it right now.
Yeah, I'm just trying to take it easy at baby steps. Word of advice, don't go too hard because your wallet's not going to thank you.
And you don't want to burn yourself out and then be like, oh, I'm going to sell everything. That.
Yeah.
That's like the worst thing ever.
Yeah, because I have so much... I got way too much shit now.
Yeah, pacing is definitely important. But I think that could be a topic in and of itself.
Oh god, have you looked at Eric's NES shelves? Holy shit!
I just got rid of the ones I didn't want.
Did you already sell them?
No, Josh wants a few of them, Xenophobe. I don't know why.
Dude, I'm all about that Xenophobe.
Why do you want Xenophobe?
So my experiences, I'm guessing, Josh, how long have you been into it?
Seriously collecting probably about the same time as Gonzalo.
Okay.
But I think I started a little bit before him. That's like kind of what got the ball rolling.
Uh-huh.
And then it really just kind of kicked in like about a year and a half ago, where it's just like, no, we're going to go, if we're going to do this thing, we're going to hit it real. We're going to do this. And that's when I really started to actually amass a collection, because before that it was just a few things here and there, and
like stuff left over from your childhood that you still had.
Yeah, I had a pretty good collection of stuff left over from when I was a kid that my sister took when she went to college, and she just kind of kept it. But I had a new job, and that was kind of how I started to talk to people. Was one of the guys there was like super into, he's like Mega Man on the brain 100% of the time. Like, I started there and everybody
else. Is his
name Chad?
I was just waiting for that.
When I started there, everybody's listening to like, there's like hip hop over here and dubstep over there, and there's this guy standing next to me playing Mega Man soundtracks. And it's like, and he got so much hate from everybody.
Really?
It's like, how can you listen to that every day? He's like, I like it, and I like Mega Man, so that's how. And we started talking about Mega Man, and then it just kind of evolved from there, because I never played the original Mega Mans. I only played Mega Man X when I was a kid. That's the one I had any experience with. And he started talking about the other ones, the originals for NES, and I'm like, I never actually had a chance to play those. And then just continually talking to him about more and more stuff, just like, it hit me right in the nostalgia.
It like gets you pumped up to
exactly. Like, I went home and I'm just like, I need to get these back. So I called my sister up. I'm like, hey, can I borrow the Super Nintendo again just so I can play some of these? And then a couple weeks later, she brought it down, and I started playing them, and then I went on to eBay, which I hate doing now, but I did it then, and I bought a couple games off of there that I never owned, but I always wanted, like my box Super Punch-Out. I got that way, and I played Punch-Out for like a month straight. Every time I came home, I would play Super Punch-Out, and it just grew from there. And then Gonzalo and I became better friends, and that's kind of how we both got into it.
It was this time last time. Year.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just like, it's time. it's time to go hard.
And then we went to Galloping Ghosts.
The thing that kicked it into full high gear was I was doing the, like, picking a couple things up here and there, and then with the punch out, and then my Illusion of Gaia, and then a couple others, and then I went to this church rummage sale that I had that my parents kind of helped organize it for the church, and they got a whole bunch of video game stuff in. They called me when I was at work on lunch, and they said, "We got like 6 boxes of video game stuff in that we have no idea what any of this is. Could you help us price some of this stuff out?" And I'm like, "Okay."
You're so lucky.
So I went there after work, and it was like someone had put the 80s in a time capsule and then just dropped it in the church. It was like, oh God, trying to remember everything. There was 2 Sega Genesis with over 40 or 45 games somewhere in that neighborhood. Master System with about 30 games in it. With a Sega CD. No Sega CD games, which is a bummer. Super Nintendo, original Nintendo, Atari. There was an Intellivision. Like, there was so much stuff. And I'm like, I have an opportunity here to get a lot of this really fast. So I snatched up a huge chunk of that, and then that was the thrill I got when I poured all of that out on the table at my house, and I just looked at it. I have never been able to replicate that feeling, how good that felt. I was like, and I just, the weeks prior, or the weeks following, where it was just playing each game I'd never heard of. Like, I'd never heard of this. Slap that in. Let's go. And it was, oh, that's why I collect, is because of that feeling. Every time I find something, I get a little piece of that feeling again. It's like, oh, it feels so good. So better than drugs.
Oh my God. Just as expensive, though.
Just as expensive. But I limit myself now.
Yeah. It's always, like, usually a lot of people who get into it, like, right away, that find stuff, like, a lot of stuff at once, then they burn out from that. But you have the exact opposite of that.
Yeah. I mean, I bought all of that at one crack, and then I didn't buy anything for a good 2 months because I had all of this stuff that I had never seen before. Like, I never owned a Genesis growing up. I'd seen a Genesis when I was about 14, and I played it for, like, maybe an hour, played some Earthworm Jim on it, and then that was it. That was the only experience with the Genesis that I had. So when I got that, and I had, I mean, there was fantastic titles in there. I mean, Hyperstone Heist, and Ghosts and Goblins, and, you know, just stuff I had never played. Streets of Rage? I never played Streets of Rage. And I am, like, Brawler extraordinaire. Like, I fucking love Brawler. And I'd never played it. So I'm sitting here playing this. I'm like, how did I not have this? What was wrong with me?
Beautiful.
It was absolutely great.
Beautiful story. Now, I guess I'm the one who's been doing it the longest. Whether that's good or not. Like, when you're into something for a while, I tried to make it just, I only want to do this, so I focused, like, my entire life around it. And I sold my records off. I sold all the other stuff I liked off. And I tried to just focus on that. And I got really burnt out doing that. And then, having bad experiences with, buying games with other people also burnt me out pretty bad. Until about a year ago, where I got back into it. And then I started collecting the records I loved again, and Laserdiscs and all that
coincidentally shit. When we all started hanging out.
No, we all started hanging around like 6 months ago.
It was I guess it was, yeah, maybe, yeah. Well, because a lot, when someone's excited about something, it gets you excited about it.
Yeah.
So it got me back into it, and
got that hype.
Thank God for that, because I would have just been one of those people who collected and never played it.
That's not okay. It's not something we condone here at Puyo Podcast.
I hate people who do that.
What was that again? Sorry.
People who collect games but don't play them.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Here. It's like, I understand having a sealed copy of a game, but if you have a sealed copy, you should have a not sealed copy so you can play it.
Exactly. My thoughts exactly. I mean, what's the point of, like, I think Billy from Game Chasers put it perfectly. He's like, you have one copy that's open and you can play it, and you have that sealed copy as more of like a, it's like preserving history.
Yeah.
In your collection. So I mean, that is a true collection piece. That's something that you have there simply for display, and that makes sense. But to have a sealed copy and that's it of something that other people really want to try and experience and, you know, really get into. Like, if somebody had a sealed copy of Panic Restaurant sitting on their shelf and went like, oh, so you have an open copy somewhere? No. You've ever played Panic Restaurant? No. I just know it's really expensive. I would hit them in the face.
Yeah, for sure.
Straight up. With a frying pan so I could fit with the Panic Restaurant theme. And then I would take it.
And then you would take it, obviously. Exactly. And then open it.
No, I'd sell it and then buy an open copy.
You could probably buy three open copies.
You could probably get a first mortgage.
I don't even know.
So I'd put a down payment down on a house and then buy an open copy so I can play it.
That's how much that game's worth.
There you go.
Ridiculous. Okay, so my story.
The saga.
The saga continues.
Are you gonna like set this up, go really epic with it? Like, in a time. Faraway lands.
Have I ever told you guys the how I got into that? Like
the chronicling of the adventure.
Found something at Goodwill?
No, I've never heard anything of it.
Oh my god. Well, here's a story for the ages. Ooh. I'll call you back, though.
Okay!
So, after the break... Boom, boom, boom. I think intermissions would be pretty cool to have in between.
That's just because you like GameSack so much.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a pointless intermission where we don't really have anything prepared to say, so...
They don't have anything.
Let's just go to the next set of games.
Hey, right. They're great guys, good. Dude. Come on, why are you doing this to them?
I will keep
saying. I'm not saying that they're bad guys. It's just like, man. Their intermissions really don't need to be there. Their intermission's like, hey, those were some games that we showed. Yeah, yeah, it was, Joe.
Let's get back into it.
Let's get back into it, okay.
Oh.
It just adds to the great... Get off Tinder!
No.
Oh my god.
I love listening to you guys talk about Tinder. Don't tell Tinder me how to live my life.
Okay, so my story. So, I am in my junior year of college right now. So, how many years ago is that?
Seven.
3 + 4 = 7. So around like 7 to 8 years ago. Like, I'm in middle school, right? And I've had this friend, Joe, that's been a friend of mine since preschool, or not preschool, kindergarten, and we're still friends today, which I think is incredible for one thing.
You guys shit diapers together?
No, we still talk about going to the sandbox together.
Dude,
that's really cool. I mean, getting off topic, that's really cool. I don't have any relationships like that, and it kind of sucks, but
yeah.
That's really cool.
Like, we can, like, literally talk about anything, but... And he lives, like, freaking 5 minutes from my house, which is the best part.
That's adorable.
So my friend Joe, we hang out. This is early 2000s time period.
Oh, so, like, Y2K and the chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water.
Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, dude.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Really?
No.
Damn, you're young.
Keep on rolling.
Okay.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
Keep on. Yeah! Oh, man.
God. The chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about right. Now that you're singing.
Well, all right. Anyways, keep going.
So, mid-90s. I'm over there. I've got a PlayStation 1. First console ever played. I'd say besides Windows 95, I would consider that a console because it's not. But and I go over to his house and he's got a Nintendo 64, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. Don't know what this is. Cartridge is weird. I don't get it. And we play the staples like Mario Kart, Mario 64, Smash Brothers, all that.
Necessary.
And, yeah.
Your gaming history.
This is like early on, before. Mm. And then at like 8 years ago, I'm over at his house and we're just talking and we're playing games. And he's like, hey, have you ever played like a Super Nintendo before? And I was like, no. And he's like, you ever played Nintendo before? And I was like, no. And he's like, oh, I let's hook it up. And I was like, okay. So he hooks it up and we play the NES and we play, I don't know, Mario,
Power Blade.
Dr. Mario. Power Blade. Surprisingly enough, Panic Restaurant, which I didn't know was expensive at the time. I don't think it was expensive at the time.
It might not have been, but
I think it was like only like $75 at the time. But either way, and I played games like that, and I'm like, hey, I really like this. And he's like, oh, next time I go to Goodwill, I will keep an eye out for an NES for you. And I was like, sweet, because he went to Goodwill a lot. And that was the time period where you could find just boatloads of stuff, and nobody was buying it, and it was like a smorgasbord.
What dreams are made of?
A smorgasbord?
And I never went. So he comes back to me one day, and he's like, hey, I got you one. And I was like, sweet. And he's like, he had the option of two, one that was sat on and one that was not. So he got me the one that was not.
One that was sat on.
What a nice guy.
To this day, he's like, I should have gotten the one that was sat on. And I'm like, oh my God. You judge. So I don't remember what the first games I got. Well, he borrowed me games at first, and I was like, okay, playing games, playing Panic Restaurant. Just $350 now. He still has it. He still has it. But, and I'm playing these games, and I'm like, okay, this is cool. And then I start going to other places, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of set it to the side, and I don't play it again for a while. And I'm like, let's go. And I go into a thrift store.
When it was off of Main Street there?
Yeah, when it was off
of Main Street. Okay, yeah. That little tiny building.
It was terrifying in there, too.
Hey, man, my buddy lives down there. You know that street right in front of the world that's like literally Little Mexico? He lives there, and I visit him. I fucking can hear chihuahuas from Mexico howl in the middle of night.
My God. But anyway, I'm walking through there, and at this point, I'm not looking for games. I was buying older cameras because I was into that for a while. So I was looking for like, ooh, let me shoot a photo kid. And I walk in and I look on the shelf and there's a boxed Genesis 2 there. And it was like $20 written on it. And I was like, oh, I vaguely know what this is from passing. From like, I've heard people talk about it. And I picked it up. And inside was, of course, the Genesis 2 RF connector and John Madden football. Not the first one, sadly, but I think it was 93 or 94.
Yeah.
So, the first retro game I ever really got into was Madden. I'm not even kidding. So that, like, breeded my love for early sports games, I guess. Yeah. And,
the sigh, like you're disappointed in yourself or something.
No, I'm just thinking about it, and I want to get that copy again, but I can't remember which Madden it was. But so I sit there and I'm playing it, and I'm like, wow, this is really a lot of fun. And I play it for a while, and then I'm like, oh, I should look to see if there's any stores that like sell this stuff. Of course, you can't walk into a Target and buy that crap.
Yeah.
So I go to like Half Price Books, and they have a very, very, very slim selection of stuff. And they don't have games, but, and I'm mentioning it because I would go there to buy records, and then they posted, like, a poster on the wall that was like, hey, we're gonna start selling old games now, and I was like, oh, that's cool, I kinda like that. So then, I started doing that, and the Genesis is the system that got me into collecting by far, and that's why it's one of my favorites.
That explains so much.
Mm-hmm. It explains my love for the Genesis, my love for sports games, and yeah, that's my story.
Yeah, see, it's I think it's interesting hearing your perspective, because you started with such a little gaming background, and now you have a collection that dwarfs anything I've actually ever seen, save for a couple people. But I mean, that's cool to me, because when I started, I had an original Nintendo. Like, I've played a lot of these games before when I was a kid. Like, I had an NES, I had a Super Nintendo, I had an N64, I bought a PlayStation 1 with myself. I actually still have that original PlayStation. Mm. That's the oldest system that I have.
PlayStation 1.
I mean, I've been with video games my entire life.
Well, I have too. I just overshadowed that part. Like, I guess I played a lot of PC, like early PC games, like point-and-click games when I was younger, because that's all we had was a PC for a while.
Gotcha.
And then we got a PlayStation later on. We got like the 9001 model, which was the last original model of the PlayStation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course, we got all the re-releases of the games that were the greatest hits ones. So that's how I played all of the Spyro games and Italian Job and Gran Turismo and Crash Bandicoot and all those. I grew up with that, but I never was like, hey, I gotta buy a game. It never was that.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a very stark contrast to me, where it was like, after the Super Nintendo, I got my N64 for Christmas, and that was when I was like, okay, I need to get more games now. But I wasn't able to collect because I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I didn't have money. I had to trade in order to get stuff. So part of me regrets having to do that because of what I'm doing now, but otherwise I wouldn't have been able to experience all the things I have. So it's catch 22, really.
I guess. I did have moments of collecting when I was younger. Like, I got a Game Boy for Christmas one year, and I went in, and my parents were like, pick out a game, and I was like, oh, and I picked Pokemon Red, the first one, the original one, mm-hmm. and that's where my love for Pokemon came from, is because I played that as a kid. Watched the anime, played the game.
Same with me. I had Blue, though. I started with Blue.
Oh, that Red is so good. But, I did start to, like, amass a collection, but then after a while, I was like, I bought a DS, and then I was like, the Game Boy is old, it sucks, so I sold all this stuff. I think most of us probably did that, too.
Yep. Yeah. And with a very similar thought process as well, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, this is old, I need the new thing.
Yeah. Funny story, though, I bought a used DS, like the original model, and when I would play it on my bed with it facing above my face, the screen would fall out and hit me in the face. I don't know why.
That sounds pretty bootleg.
I don't know. I didn't even return it either. I had it for years.
That's not a DS, dude.
Oh, jeez. So that's why in my collection I have...
It's not a DS, it's a BS.
It's a BS. That's but that's why I have an affinity for handheld stuff, and why I'm trying to get every color of Game Boy is because I had that as a kid. Which is rooted in nostalgia, I guess.
You're a trooper. You're a trooper, Eric.
Starship Trooper. Have you seen Starship Trooper?
It's so good.
It is so good.
The only good bug is a dead bug.
Have you seen the second one?
I have not. I only saw the animated one that they released.
The Japan one?
It was pretty Japan.
I've never seen it.
That was released on Netflix.
It's not very good.
There was a CG TV series of Starship Troopers.
It's like the weirdest, like, B-level...
The animated one's that kind of CG shit, too, where it's just weird.
Yeah.
I like that movie a lot. Something about it.
And they made, like, four more movies that no one cared about.
Was it, like, a B-level movie when it came out, or was it, like...
I think so. There wasn't really any, there wasn't any well-known actors in it except for Neil Patrick Harris, and he wasn't really big at that time either, so...
I think he, I think it was a straight to DVD thing too.
Pretty
it was
sure. Like,
no on way. The Sci-Fi Starship Channel. Troopers?
Oh yeah.
No. There's no way it's straight to DVD.
It was really good. Like, I really liked it.
The Starship Troopers PC game was really sick, though.
There's a PC game?
Yeah.
Holy crap, 97? I feel old.
There's no way it's straight to...
I mean, it did look like it had some decent production value, but it was... It still felt really cheap and campy, you know?
I saw that as a kid, and the part that always sticks with me and scares the shit out of me is when the news anchor is just standing there like an idiot when everyone else is running like away.
Cleaved.
Yeah, dude, he just gets torn in half. Oh, my God.
It was so tasty. Mm. I showed that to Cowboy Mike when he was working it with me. And I'm like, be warned, this movie's kind of bloody. And every time something happens, he's like, ugh! Oh, it was so good.
The brain bug who literally sucks your brains out?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It did come out in theaters.
I guess.
Okay, next topic on hand.
Okay.
Speedball.
How many pants are you wearing right now?
I got one pants, zero. No underwear.
Zero pants. Speedball 2 is on the Game Boy? Oh, crap. I'm literally going to write that down.
Oh, crap.
I could talk about the five-screen thing, probably. You know about that, right?
No.
So, let me get an example out for Gazalvesy. Why is the difference between these two games?
The one of those is OG because it doesn't have that stupid tab on the right side. And on the it's left. Flat.
So, certain NES games were, like, if you're looking on a shelf and you see NES games and you're like, and then you see some of them have the tabs on the top and some of them don't, you're like, oh, I wonder why it's like that. Well, I'm gonna tell you why. So, the flat top of the NES games, the ones that don't have the tabs, are early releases. I believe from, like, 85 to 86 or 87, they started doing the flat top ones with the five screws, and you'll know it right away because when you go to take it apart, you won't need a bit drive because you can just use a flathead screwdriver to take it apart. Which is one of the reasons why they changed it, because one is the cost would probably be less, I imagine, and the security reasons so nobody could open them up and kids can, like, break things or, like, cut themselves or whatever.
Placing all those rare games with copies of Bayou Billy.
That too, and replacing stuff, and a lot of the early games are, I'm pretty sure it's 100% of the Black Box games, but then they were, again, re-released with the tabs. Also, a couple Capcom games, a couple Data East games, early Konami games, early SNK games, early Taito games, early Bandai games, early Tecmo games.
Yeah, because I have Ninja Kid, which is Bandai, and then Ghouls and Ghosts for the NES, so that's Capcom.
And certain games, like people... Certain variants are more expensive than others. Not by much, but sometimes it can be significant. Like, oh, I'm looking for the flat top version of Russian Attack. It could be like, I don't know, $2 more. If they really care about the set at the store that you buy it from. Because early release games are harder to find than later release games, obviously.
I mean, Russian Attack's like... $400 in and of itself, so...
I know, it's...
What is it, like $420?
Exactly.
Still worth it.
I'd buy it. I'd buy that for $420.
I'd buy that.
And, the certain games... what are you... You're just crumpling over there.
He's crumpler. Oh my
God. You're off the podcast.
You're off the force. Turn in your badge, Kung Fury.
It's going to be a recurring thing every time we do this, isn't it? You're off the podcast.
You're off the force.
But I guess the only other thing I can say is people look for certain flat top games. Like, I know Cuckoo Land, Baseball, Hogan's Alley, I think Mach Rider, and Wrecking Crew are the ones people look for the most, because inside of them is a Famicom converter, and you can tell by looking at the pins on the inside. There's a specific type of way the pins were cut that you can tell this is the converter cartridge versus not. I'm not going to get into what it looks like. You can Google for that. It'd be too hard to explain. But within that, they when they were releasing the NES in America, they had the boards already from the Famicom, because the Famicom was already out since... Was it 83 or 84?
84.
84. I think it may have been 83 in test markets. But
yeah, maybe. I think you're right.
But yeah, so they already had the boards, and they already had this collection of games being all the black box games, and I guess some third-party games, but not many. And they had the boards readily available, and they're like, we're not going to design a board. So they just made a converter that would convert the 60-pin to the 72-pin that we have. So the reason why people go for them is, number one, they're uncommon, and they're definitely rare of the two. And you can take out the converter inside it and make a case around it and use it as like a honeybee for the NES to play Famicom games.
That I did not know.
Look at this guy with his fucking NES knowledge.
And that is really cool.
Yeah, it's... You don't want to use it really that often because it's still, like, fragile, but it's... You could literally do it today. You could just pull it out, put it in. People more or less use it for the top loader because you don't have to, like, put it inside of the NES and never get it out again. Yeah, it's... Stop crumpling! Oh my god!
Eric.
Go to the gym, you're not wanted.
Damn!
That's fine by me. That's where all my real friends are.
Oh, Jesus.
Well then, I guess that was my topic. If you have anything to add about that.
NES.
I didn't know anything about that, so yeah, I really can't.
I don't know how I came to know about that. I think... I was taking stuff apart one day, and I was like, oh, these are easier to take apart. And then I Googled, I'm like, why is it like this? And then they're like, you can get converters inside it. And I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Hmm.
Yeah, so definitely sought after. If you want it, usually in game stores, they won't know which ones have the converter in them. And they feel slightly heavier than the other ones, but it's like a very slight heavier that you can't really pinpoint. But yeah, I guess if people really don't know about it, so it's easier to find.
Nice.
Alright, I think that concludes the script.
I imagine so.
Ain't nobody gonna listen to this anyway, so.
Thank you for listening to episode 1, and stay tuned for episode 2.